This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Park at Amphike Park, and joined as always by Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf. Ready Player One is finally in cinemas. This, of course, is Steven Spielberg's take on Ernest Cline's best-selling science fiction pop culture novel. It stars Ty Sheridan, Olivia Cooke, Ben Mendelsohn, Mark Rylance, Simon Pegg, and a whole host of other great people. The movie, of course, tells the story of Wade Watts living in a future when everyone is kind of committed to virtual reality. Human life and existence is really dull and boring and poor and pointless, so everyone kind of lives their lives in Minecraft world.
Yes.
The movie is pure Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
It is only him that could have pulled something like this off. For those of you who don't know, the Ernest Cline novel was an exercise in fan wank. It was him growing up as a child of the 80s, this white American middle-class dude, obsessed with 80s pop culture, video games, Back to the Future, movies, TV shows, and decides to kind of amalgamate all of that into this novel, which was based around the very simple premise of a quest adventure.
Yeah, but he did it in a very clever way. He set a book in the future, but had everyone obsessed about what he grew up with, because the character who created the Oasis Holiday was obsessed with that time. So in order to, there's a quest to find the Easter egg at the heart of the Oasis, finish some challenges, and then you will become the owner of that. And I think was it owner in a couple of $1 trillion worth of shares as well?
Pretty much.
So in a world where that hasn't, I think in the book it takes longer. There's longer between Holiday's death and when the adventure starts. It's 5 years, I think, in this.
Yeah.
But after, like, with such a big prize at stake, the world has become obsessed with the 80s again. Like these Gunters, the egg hunters, they know every reference. They are the most annoying person you'll ever meet at a party. They will just talk about Ghostbusters the whole time, which is good at sometimes, but not all the time.
There is a ton of stuff to talk about in this movie. I think the first thing, of course, is whether or not we liked it. I really did enjoy it. I had a great time at the cinema. I often think that Spielberg's mass appeal movies are going to outlast and outlive all of his serious work.
Yeah.
Schindler's List is amazing. The Post is incredible.
But it's no Indiana Jones.
It is no Indiana Jones. Right? It is no Jaws. No. I mean, something like Ready Player One is the perfect definition of popcorn fare. This is what Steven Spielberg cut his teeth on.
This is what it means by popcorn fare, right? Like, Steven Spielberg started the summer blockbuster season with Jaws.
With Jaws.
And this is essentially that. It's, you know, don't look too much into it. Like, there's no metaphor, there's no story. No, it's this great
It's irrelevant.
Movie. Yeah, like, sure, there is and all that, but...
Yeah, but the Oasis is poverty, man.
You shut your mouth! But this movie is just that, right? It's just a fun sort of ride, 2.5 hours, whatever it is, then you leave and you're good.
And it should be said that not only is Spielberg the only one who can pull together all the licensing on this, it's also the story.
Yeah.
They've changed the book quite a bit, which is a good thing, because if you take certain sections of the book out of context, it's really bad.
Yeah.
Like, there's some descriptions of him talking about tricking out his DeLorean with the Knight Rider red light at the front, and he has a sweet Ghostbusters logo on the wall. And if you read that, I read the book at the time and I felt this is kind of fun. And reading them out of context now, it's like, ugh.
No, but here's the thing, right? The novel wasn't revolutionary science fiction.
No.
I think it was fan wank, and it was sold as that in the sense that I think Ernest Cline wasn't expecting to write high literature.
No.
It's just that there were some reviewers at the time who kind of made it out to be a lot more than it was.
But when it comes to some of the descriptions as well about when he meets Artemis are a bit gross as well when you see them now. And they have just kept the backbone nicely. They've kept the characters nicely. They've removed some character deaths. I didn't realize
that.
I'd forgotten. Because I'm in that sweet spot again of where I've read the book far enough ago that I was
same
like, this seems right to me. And then I'm like, wait, hang on. These challenges are completely different.
Yes.
But they all work.
Now, Ernest Cline and Zach Penn wrote the script. And it feels in that sense like Ernest Cline had a second whack at it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, the depictions of women are a bit creepy at times. Also, the Asian stereotypes can be a bit on the nose.
Yeah.
But I think Spielberg tones it down as much as humanly possible in this film compared to what we saw.
He solved the ages, right?
Yeah, and this is less of a, you know, Wade Watts' story, and it becomes more like The Goonies or something else, where it's those kids versus an evil corporation pulling together against an evil corporation thing, which works really well. Even all the posters and all the marketing, again, marketing teams, 2018, raise your game. They have like that nice roundy Oasis-looking logo for Ready Player One. You know the one that's nicely designed and everything? Not using the movie, they used a flat white font on a black background.
Right, correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is just like, this is an 80s movie. Mm. You are not getting a, we're not getting 3D animated logos at the beginning of the movie. You are getting Ready Player One.
And that's exactly what this is. This is an 80s movie. The movie doesn't go deep into all of that metaphor, like you said, Bahe, because there are potential avenues involving discussions about artificial worlds and our lives and how it affects humanity and all of that stuff.
And there's a hint of that in the book, because he's out of shape and he's chubby at the beginning. It's only as the adventure progresses and he gets access to more money and essentially a trainer that he gets fit and becomes a better... He doesn't look like Ty Sheridan to start with. He looks more like Chunk from The Goonies.
Correct, yes. Correct. And the movie focuses purely on that quest adventure.
Yeah.
And I think it's so much stronger for it, right? I don't think it spent enough time. I think we have enough things in 2018, the Westworlds and all of the science fiction we have, the altered carbons.
Yeah.
I think we've got enough stuff talking about how humanity is...
Humanity's relationship with technology and
how it's threatening to go down into dystopia, right? I think we've got enough of that stuff. But this is Cloak and Dagger. It's War Games. It's The Goonies.
Yeah.
It is all of those...
It's not War Games.
It's not War Games.
Essentially,
right.
It's not War Games.
Yeah. So you should say, if you're looking forward to the challenges from the books, they have changed quite a bit. Yeah.
But in a good sense. Like, initially, I was like, well, why did they change it? And then I thought, actually, I was skimming through the book after I watched the movie, and I thought, no, actually, it was very clever, because a lot of the rejigged challenges work so much better cinematically.
Oh, yes, definitely. Mm. I don't want to watch all of War Games with Wade inside of it. That would not work very well.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and I think An Adventure is the third challenge is in there, so that kind of, they keep some of that stuff.
You will lose your mind trying to keep track of all of the references.
You're
going
to have to buy
movie.
The DVD and Blu-ray to go through, because you're not going to be able to catch it.
Like, I gave up. There's like, even at the point where the beginning, they're explaining the Oasis, there's like, in the Oasis, you can go climbing Everest with Batman.
Yeah.
And then like RoboCop walks out of a portal. There's some Hello Kitty characters on the floor.
I miss Hello Kitty.
It's just a joyous point. I mean, Microsoft are having fun with their IP. It says at the end, courtesy of, but it doesn't say who is courtesy of in the credits. But like, you do pass through Minecraft world. Yep. And at one point, there's just like a group of Master Chiefs from Halo running along. Right? Like, that's a funny image.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially when you know that these are like, it cuts to the real world and it's kids running around in virtual reality goggles on.
Yeah, and I wasn't joking when I said Steven Spielberg is the only one who can make this happen. Apparently, they spent 3 to 4 years acquiring and negotiating the rights for all of this stuff. Yeah. I mean, we see the Iron Giant in the movie, but that's only because Ultraman that's in the book is currently under litigation.
Yeah.
And even Spielberg couldn't pull that off.
Yeah.
But for me, that's a really fascinating thing to look into. And I'm waiting for either the documentary or the op-ed piece on it or the interview about it, because what was that process like?
And the choices they made. Like, did you notice the swordfish from Cowboy Bebop in H's lair? And it's like, there's a model of it and there's a big one in the back.
So
is this something he's a fan of?
Right.
Is this something he said, hey, millennials, tell me what's cool?
Yeah.
Or what? Like, what? You see the Serenity from Firefly. Like, and it's very clearly
up close. It's very prominent. Yeah.
I think, was at the end, was that a... Battlestar Galactica blaster he had at one point. I thought that might have been a Star Trek phaser at one point. It's hard to see. The bigger ones, they haven't done so much of.
Yeah.
He has contradicted himself saying there's some Star Wars in there, but I think that's probably something that's going to be even more of an Easter egg for people to find.
Yeah, and I just read an Entertainment Weekly article about how Steven Spielberg was quite adamant in keeping all of his films out of the movie.
Mm.
So other than the DeLorean, nothing else from his
stuff. That, he was only producer. It was a Bob Zemeckis film.
But obviously he must like Bob Zemeckis a lot, because he put a massive plot thing in there, which is cool. Which is like, that's not in the game, in the book as well.
I don't remember that in the book. Yeah.
So even the crew were trying to sneak in Spielberg stuff in it, and he just kept nixing it. So in the background there'd be walls, there'd be images of the gremlins. He said, nope, take it out.
But we should also say, this movie's very funny.
It is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it can redeem T.J. Miller at this point, but he plays a villainous henchman. Mm. And
he plays it very well.
Compared to some other movies we've seen recently, every line he says is funny.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's being slightly villainous or not, he manages to turn everything into a joke really nicely.
Yeah.
And that was fun. And at the end of it, my girlfriend was clutching me, because it's tense.
It is
a lot more tense. I think the ending in the book is not that they don't have the same kind of dramatic setup, but the, let's say, the motion that they're going through at the end, while the VR world and the real world, like, that's incredibly cleverly done, and it builds up tension beautifully, and it really pays out. Again, only Spielberg would take that book and turn it into this and say, well, the book's okay, but how about we do this?
Yeah.
How about we have a car chase in the third act?
There's also a great thing with the depictions of all of the characters as being completely socially inept. Because the world is engrossed in this oasis. They have so little human interaction. And everyone from Wade Watts' aunt to her boyfriend to all of the other major characters as well, Artemis and the villains, everyone's socially inept. All of their real world interactions are awkward. Hilariously awkward. Yeah. And I think that was a conscious choice. And it really, really works.
No.
Yeah.
This is the future, nerds.
Although I do have some trouble with a lot of these side characters. I think a lot of them are quite one-dimensional. I think, like, with the aunt and the aunt's boyfriend.
Yeah, but there's not enough time to get.
Really, I agree.
The aunt and the aunt's boyfriend were almost every Spielberg, Zemeckis, Lucas step family.
Yes.
They're the Dursleys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Virtual Harry Potter's got to go have his adventure, so we have to get rid of them. We have to have them there so we know he's, like, not been living on the streets, because that would be a sad story, and we can't do that.
We can't be too sad. Exactly.
The movie gives a lot more for Artemis to do as well.
Yes.
And there is a fantastic, we won't even mention it or plot point, but there is a fantastic moment in the second challenge.
Yeah.
And we're not going to tell you what it is, because when it happens, it'll blow your mind.
The gasps that came from our screening.
Bahir and I kind of leaned into the screen because we couldn't believe what we were watching.
Which is great for, like, a book that's been out a while and hailed as a game changer and all that stuff. They changed up enough to keep it really fresh.
Yeah, I agree. I think I want to watch it again. I think that's sort of really what's a good...
On the biggest screen possible.
On the biggest screen possible.
The music as well.
With the best sound system.
Yeah, sound system.
Is it Mark Silvestri? Is that his name? I always get confused.
And John Williams.
Yeah, Mark and John Williams. Yes. And there's, like, there's a punch at the very end that has... Is it a Back to the Future or Goonies tie from it? There's, like, a little kind of... kind of thing kind of like... It's not like a wah-wah, but it's like the 80s... Zemeckis version of that.
Yeah.
And just throughout, there's, like, it wasn't so obvious.
No, the movie.
Like a trailer. It's not like it has the Back to the Future theme playing throughout it.
No, the movie is going to drive you mad because of the soundtrack. No, literally, I was sitting at the screening and John Williams and Mark Silvestri, they're referencing themselves.
Yes.
No.
They're going back and forth.
And they're going back and forth, and there are these different moments where all of these songs sound so familiar, but they're not the entire song. So it's not like the Back to the Future theme. It's embedded in something else, and it's crazy.
This movie is, like, laser targeted at us. So we obviously liked it.
Yeah. No, it's great fun. I think this is one of those things where once you see it in the cinema, go back, watch it with your friends so you can sit around a coffee table and just talk about 3 hours with it.
And it makes you feel like a kid again.
Yeah.
I think that's the point.
And I think it's not just the watching the movie makes you feel like a kid. It makes you feel like a kid watching a Spielberg movie in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like, it reminds you what that magic of watching Goonies,
like, since
was.
Like, what, Jurassic Park would be the last one he did a kind of a popcorn thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, AI was too serious for that.
And ignore the references. I mean, just even if you don't get any of the popcorn references.
It's BMX Bandit or something like that. It's like kids on an adventure.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the mood and the feel, right? You know, something that, you know, even JJ failed to capture in his
Star Wars.
No,
8mm
movie.
It's not 8mm, guys. Seriously,
no, I know
it's not 8mm.
That's the
Nicolas Cage movie. Which one is
that? What's it called? Super 8. That's what it's called.
Super 8. Yeah.
Super 8. Right. And that's exactly what Abrams was going for with Spielberg as executive producer.
Missed by a country mile.
It missed by a country mile.
I mean, everything apart from the guy from Saturday Night Lights, what's his name?
Kyle Chandler.
Kyle Chandler. Like, I mean, everything at the kids, it's no Stranger Things.
The question I want to ask is, I want to go around asking the younger people who watch this movie.
Find a millennial.
And ask them, like, do these 80s references make you feel the way we do? Because we grew up watching...
But the other thing is, there's enough new stuff that's been invented between now and 2045 that if you're not looking for it, it's just like, oh, look, there's a load of spaceships. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you don't need to know that's actually a Battletoad running alongside Mr. Halo. But it's like, oh, it's the Halo guy, I guess.
Yes, I guess.
You know,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
big enough. They're big enough that they can
see
that.
No, I know. But, like, for us geeking out, like, You know, it's not Firefly.
Oh, yeah, right? But I think the story will still carry on. Because the story and the tension at the end is
real. I'm not saying it's they're not going to enjoy it. I'm just like, are they going to geek out the way we're geeking out right now when we see the DeLorean?
Probably
when we see Akira's motorcycle.
It depends on their parents and how annoying they are about, like, watch this, love this.
Yeah.
Be me.
You must love the same things I do.
Exactly.
Ready Player One is now in cinemas. Go check it out on the biggest possible screen. Let us know what you think. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahi Wyatt.
You're listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.